Welcome to another episode of the Cash Compound Podcast, where special guest and coach Jesse Durham is in the house. Jesse,
what's up, everybody?
What are we talking about?
Today we're going to be talking about something that's not so spoken of, policy withdrawals. A withdrawal is exactly what it sounds like. It is going to be a withdrawal of premiums that have been paid. So premium has been paid into the properly structured whole life policy with a mutual company that pays dividends. You are withdrawing those premiums back out. One big aspect worthy of note is that because you are withdrawing premiums that were paid on already taxed dollars, this is not a tax implication as long as you are making withdrawals only up to or below your cost basis. So your cost basis simply means the amount of total premiums that you've paid into the policy. You can always make withdrawals up to that amount, up to the cost basis, without incurring any taxes. Now, policy withdrawals are not so commonly spoken of when you're just becoming your own banker, when you're just getting started in the beginning years of having your privatized banking system and using that system for financing equipment or recapturing debt or whatever it is that you're doing in business, in your household, in investing, however it is that you're banking, okay, policy loans are what are used, okay, because you're leveraging your cash value from the company via policy loans so that you can pay that back and pay that back with interest, which ends up being additional premium to your life insurance policy, extra PUAs, extra paid up additional payments, premium payments, okay? But what I'm saying is that withdrawals are not typical in those first years. Now, here's where withdrawals do become a pertinent aspect in your plan. So you bank with your policy over your lifetime using policy loans. Okay, you pay premiums into the policy, you make policy loans to yourself, you're doing in business with your household, investing, whatever it is that you're doing banking wise. And then, of course, that means that you pay that back, that policy loan, to the insurance company plus interest, which ends up being additional paid up additional premium, PUA premium. That grows the death benefit, that grows the cash value. So you're banking with a policy, using policy loans in your lifetime. Now, when you get to retirement age or when you get to that passive income, that's the way I prefer to look at it, passive income time of life, that may be a time when you are ready to access tax-free capital from your system, your private banking system, for supplementing your income, completely covering your income at that passive income time. You can use withdrawals then, of course. And again, up to the cost basis is going to mean no tax implications. And Nash does talk about this and walk you through this in his book, Becoming Your Own Banker. So I'd encourage you to double check that if you've already read the book. And if you've not read Becoming Your Own Banker, then that is the place to start in learning about becoming your own banker and why policy withdrawals are relevant at that time, because you have tax-free access to capital to supplement your income or to completely cover your passive income at that stage in life. And then when you have made policy withdrawals up to the cost basis, one point here real quick, policy withdrawals, just like policy loans, can change your death benefit amount, can change your cash value amount, of course, in the policy inherently because you're accessing capital from the policy. But worthy of pointing out right here, but when you make withdrawals in passive income time of life up to the cost basis, that is when you can transition to policy loans for the remainder of your life, having access to tax-free capital from your policy. And again, let me reiterate that one of the reasons why we would not want to make withdrawals from our policy in the beginning years of owning and using the policy, we'd prefer not to. You can. You are the owner. You can. This is your private property. You can. But we would not want to, because withdrawing premiums from the policy interrupts the compounding that would have happened otherwise for the remaining life of the policy. Here I'm knocking equipment. So we would not want to make, though, policy withdrawals early on, because that's going to interrupt the compounding that we otherwise would have experienced, because every dollar that we pay in premium compounds in the policy for our whole life. Puns always intended there, whole life. So would we want to get to that money? You can. It's your policy. It's your private property. You can make that withdrawal when you want, up to the cost basis, no tax implications, but recognize that it interrupts the compounding that otherwise would have happened. So when you're in an accumulation phase, when you're in that banking phase of life prior to passive income, and that doesn't mean that passive income inherently stops the banking function. Oh, no. Banking just is. You can control it and you can profit from it, of course, your whole life, even in passive income. But what I'm saying is passive income means that we would want to use withdrawals from the policy, perhaps, up to the cost basis, then transition to policy loans, okay, for the remainder of our passive income years, using the policy and hopefully a system of policies that we have built. I've personally been practicing this concept for the better part of a decade now. We own several of these policies, multiple policies with multiple companies. We continue to add to our system over time, of course. The idea is to have a system of policies wherein we will have capital that we can make policy withdrawals from in passive income years, and then still transition to policy loans to maintain 100% tax-free access to capital in passive income and retirement years. So I hope that this has been helpful and insightful talking about policy withdrawals. I would encourage you to continue checking out more nuanced information about whole life insurance for those implementing the infinite banking concept. If you'd like to have a conversation, of course, about how you could implement the infinite banking concept into your household, your business, or your investing, then don't hesitate to reach out to me. You can contact me at DurhamTalents.com. For today's quick take, I want to address using infinite banking for recurring expenses. So let's dive right in on this topic. Now, one of the most redeeming qualities, I believe, about Nelson's work in his book, Becoming Your Own Banker, his second book, Building Your Warehouse of Wealth, everything that he did in teaching us about the infinite banking concept is that it's for the average American, is that it's for the lay person, and is that it's just for me. It's for you. If we choose, if we're open to thinking about this, considering it, vetting it, understanding it, and implementing it, it's just for us regular people, okay? And us regular people have regular recurring expenses, don't we? Absolutely. So when Nelson is in his book talking about appliances, I mean, I just had a hot water heater issue this week, actually, in our home. We're having a leak from our hot water heater. So doesn't stuff like that just happen, right? That something breaks and we need a new one, or just being proactively replacing. We do things. We buy things. We have recurring expenses is what I'm saying. I don't believe that was our first hot water heater. Shouldn't be our last. These are regular expenses that we have. Now, some are more regular and recurring than others, but you understand what I'm saying. We buy things over and over and over again, okay? So what I'll tell you, of course, right now is that in the past and in the future, we don't address or confront, not in our household, because we're our own bankers. We are our own bankers. We don't address these recurring expenses without using our infinite banking lens. There's no way for us to unknow what we already know. So we're our own bankers. We privately finance the things that we do in life, to include here, you know, like I say, 3 years later from the first time that I talk about recurring expenses and infinite banking. And it doesn't matter whether it's our property taxes. It doesn't matter whether it's the hot water heater. It doesn't matter whether it's automobile repairs. We've got a vehicle in the shop actually right now. So all these things that we all have to address and confront, we do it. This is just our lifestyle. This is just our paradigm. This is just our come from and our children, Jacob, Josiah, and Lana, 10 years old, 8 years old, 4 years old. They know that we are our own bankers. We use policies to be able to address these things. So let me ask you some questions, though, in this quick take on recurring expenses. Think about this. Take whatever cost that you want here. take whatever cost that you want to. I don't care if it's a subscription. I don't care if it's a monthly expenditure that you have. Just ask yourself this. Whatever that cost is that likely to go up? The amount of that cost for that item, that one item that I want you to hold in your mind right now, whatever that is for you, just think of one regular recurring expense. Maybe pick the one you don't like. Pick the one that you know you're going to pay, but you don't like it. You're not happy about it. You wish you didn't have to, okay? Take that expense and just ask yourself, is that cost likely to go up? And if it is, and I do believe that it is, shouldn't we be compounding now? Shouldn't we be capitalizing now? Shouldn't we intentionally and proactively? Don't have to. I said, shouldn't we? Couldn't we? Do you have to? No, don't have to. You can keep ignoring it, right? You can spend all that you earn and all those different things that Nash talks about in his book. But if the cost is likely to go up, shouldn't we be compounding and capitalizing today in anticipation of that? I think it would be prudent. Let me ask you another question that I hope will expand our thought. The taxation on this expense that you're holding in your mind, is that likely to go up in the future? I would say that it seems likely, history would indicate that taxation in every area may increase. So again, shouldn't we be compounding now? Shouldn't we be capitalizing now? And those are two different things. You can capitalize without compounding. I don't believe that you can compound without capitalizing. But anyway, that's an interesting thought. Maybe we'll talk more about that. I believe we should be capitalizing and compounding now because we don't know that the cost of things won't continue to go up. We don't know that the taxation on these things won't continue to go up. And then ultimately, my third question is, if you could get multiple jobs accomplished by the same dollars, okay, so we all experience cash flow in whatever level that we experience cash flow, whether you're running a household, whether you have a business, whether you're an investor, no matter what your financial footprint looks like, we all experience a cash flow. Now think about that cash flow and ask yourself, before those dollars do go out to some expense, can we get multiple jobs, multiple tasks, multiple items accomplished before those dollars ultimately leave us? I'm saying that when you pay premiums into a properly structured whole life policy with a mutual company that pays dividends, that money forever, for your whole life, pun always intended, for your whole life, those dollars are going to be capitalizing in that policy and compounding. They are going to create, properly structured, that's important, they are going to create multiples of themselves in the future, in the death benefit and in the cash value. So at the back end, the death benefit, intergenerational transition of tax-free wealth, okay? And in the cash value, meaning that in the future, you will have multiples to be able to address, multiple dollars to be able to address the same issue that you're seeking to address today, whatever that recurring expense is. Because if we enjoy cars today, we'll probably enjoy transportation, whatever it may look like, 5 years from now, 50 years from now. Yes? Okay. So whatever that recurring expense happens to look like, why shouldn't we try and accomplish multiple jobs with the dollars that we have today? And if you know these things, if you know that the cost of this recurring expense is likely to go up, if you know that taxation is likely to go up, and once you do know and you understand that you can accomplish multiple jobs with the same dollars, why wouldn't you get started? When would you want to get started? How many of those entities that could compound your capital would you want to have? I mean, these are all valid and relevant questions to addressing recurring expenses that we all have. And all of these expenses, and I'll show you this, all of these expenses can be addressed in these two conventional ways. The two conventional ways of finance are, and everything is finance, are credit and cash. Credit and cash. See how I made both of those a C? I think that's cool. There's a third mystery one, which is going to be compounding. I'll go ahead and tell you, right? But the credit way, and there are lots of questions to ask about credit. Are we assuming risk? Are we paying interest? Are we fronting collateral? Lots of valid questions, but you go down into debt and you slowly build out of it. End result zero. End result zero. Okay. Cash, for all my cash is king folks, you save up, spend, save up, spend, save up, and spend. Every time that expense is, you got to save up for it if you're going to go the cash route beforehand. And people don't put a time value on money. That's so important. But then we spend, and again, the net result is It puts us back at zero. Well, that mystery way of that mystery way of finance is not the conventional route of cash or credit. It's compounding. It's we could compound our cash flows over our lifetime to be able to address our need of finance, to be able to address recurring expenses. And the philosophy, the principles, the paradigm, it's all right here in Becoming Your Own Banker by R. Nelson Nash. And the product as well. The product as well. The properly structured whole life policy with a mutual company that pays dividends. This is the lifestyle that we've assumed for addressing recurring expenses is we buy these properly structured whole life policies from mutual companies that pay dividends. We've built a system of them over the better part of a decade now. And from our privatized banking system, we address our need for these recurring expenses, whatever they may be, our vehicles. And this is a really appropriate time to remind us of the average all-American spreadsheet that Nash has in his book, Becoming Your Own Banker, where he shows how much goes to autos, how much goes to housing, how much goes to lifestyle, and then how much goes to savings. He's very generous on savings. It's probably off base completely because the average American is not saving. But in that conservative look, you see where the vast majority of our dollars go. And when you really realize how much of that expense is actually interest, which again brings us back to banking. Who controls the banking function in your life? If you could keep all of the interest that you would typically pay with conventional financing on your recurring expenses, if you could keep that, how much more control would you have? How much more financial independence and autonomy would you have over the banking function in your life? And therefore, how much more profitability would you have? So remember, wealth must reside somewhere. Everything is financed. And you can control and profit from that financing. So this has been a great pleasure for me. Again, if you would let me know here what you think about infinite banking for recurring expenses, if you'd share anything, any of our clients, anybody like to put anything in the comments about how you've used infinite banking for your recurring expenses, that would be neat to be able to see. I've told you some of mine. And again, if this quick take or any of our content has been valuable, what I'd like to ask you is to subscribe to our channel. I know if you're listening to this right here at the end of the video that you are an avid listener, that you are intentional about growing and expanding your thinking and probably what it is that you're doing or wanting to do in the infinite banking space. You're vetting this concept or you've already implemented this concept and you're continuing your learning. I commend you. It would mean a lot to me if I could see you subscribe, not so much for the metrics, but to be able to know that you've made it to the end of this video, that it does bring value to you. That's what matters to me. And if you'd like to have a conversation about what it could look like for you to implement the infinite banking concept, I've got my presentation. I've got my contact information on our website. This has been a great pleasure for me. I hope you have a great day. Take care. You are now tuned to the Banking Bros. Said we couldn't make it. Three could settle. This the life we chose. Gave a lot of game. We never got a lot of things. Bow your head and say the prayer. We taught you how to be the bank.